Hello and welcome. Welcome to the Dr. Lake Show. This is Dr. Paula Lake. I am really happy to be here today. I have the pleasure of getting to have a great conversation with someone that I've known a very long time and that I have a lot of respect for, that has worked in the community extensively with the public to help people towards self-growth, including holding workshops and retreats, doing private counseling. And also someone that I know has done a lot of experiential work that I think very often we need in order to help make any kind of lasting change, is to have personal experiences that are pivotal, that will allow us to make the changes we want in our lives. And her name is Susan Casper. And thank you. I'm so pleased to have you because, you know, I've known you for so long and I know you've done a lot of work in the community. I mean, over 40 years of work, really. And so you've been a real contributor to people and committed and passionate towards that whole endeavor of having people improve their relationships and their lives. Thank you, Susan, for being here.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things we talked about, and for me, you know, with upcoming Valentine's Day, one of my themes for that day is really looking at relationships, because I think relationships are at the core of our well-being in so many ways. And yet we struggle with them sometimes, and in part in communication. And I think that is so important. And I know that that's something that you do a lot of work with people, in helping them create connection and communicate better. I'm wondering if you could talk just a little bit of what you've done, what your passion has been around that.
Well, I think that like so many of us, I grew up not really understanding much about communication. All I did was look at sort of was a relatively dysfunctional family life, which yes. I think a lot of people can relate to. Mm-hmm. And I really was confused. I didn't really know how to make things work. I could see things weren't working, and my little sweet heart wanted things to work and wanted people to love each other and for things to go smoothly, but I really didn't have a clue.
Yeah.
And that in a way started me on my path towards seeking out what makes relationships work and what makes communication work. And I think you know, what I say to people sometimes is, well, did you come from a family where someone showed you how to communicate, where they pointed out to you when your communication wasn't working and what you might try differently, or in school, did they show you anything about communication? So, you know, and mostly the answer is no, not really.
Yeah.
So I think that that's what really started me out on my quest to look at communication. And one of the teachers I had, his point of view was that it's one of the biggest problems in humanity in this time, and probably at all times.
Yeah.
And the reason why it's like that is because of the past. Because we carry around our past, and we, instead of being present with each other, the past is there and everything that we've made up about the past. And because there's just the past and no one really listening, then there's a clash. And
it's the past bleeding into the present, right? You know, that somehow we carry it like a baggage with us, and we carry it into all our relationships. And so then how do we start to unpack that?
So I think one of the important things is to realize that when you carry that past, when you have all that going on, that you're not listening.
Yeah,
you're not listening to now, and you're not seeing the person in front of you.
Yeah.
So that baggage, that past, is like a blinder over your eyes, and you can't see and you can't hear.
It's a filter, and it in a way it distorts what we're actually listening to, and what we're observing. It's like a filter that like the screen, camera screen, where we put the screen on and we can't see things exactly as they are. Absolutely. And so that is huge. And I know that you're saying when it comes from the past that these are patterns that we've developed from childhood, things that we learned from our parents. I mean, where do we learn our communication mostly from? I mean, I know at school we don't have a lot of, I'm hoping it's improving. I know they do have some, but it's a skill. And I don't know if it's a skill that we're actually taught in how to do. And so that's been part of your mission right now is to bridge that. And you did some of that work for yourself, and now you're doing it and give it a lot of it back to the community. One of the things I'm always curious about is what goes wrong in our communication and how relationships evolve. I've worked with different couples, and some of them have a hard time getting along about most things. They can argue from anything from socks, you know, being put on the floor to bigger things. So it can be equally disruptive, even when it's not always the major issues, even on the smaller issues that people
get. My husband and I were like cats. It was always about the cats.
It was your chronic, it's a cat issue, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, Gottman actually talked about he's one of the major researchers in couples, but he talked about the problems that are solvable and some of those that aren't solvable, but how we communicate it is what matters. What is it you find that gets in the way of people being able to really be present and work through issues, differences together? What's your observation?
I think that, you know, we started out talking about the past, and certainly is that. And then there's also such a strong feeling in us that we need to make our point. We need to be right. Yeah. We need to get the other to listen. We need to get the other to agree. All of these activities are going on. So when we go to communicate, we are bringing that sense. So if I come to you and I want, my attitude is that you need to listen to me, you need to really get me, you need to agree with me, then you know there's a lot of pressure on you.
Yes.
So I'm putting all the pressure on you because I want something from you. And I think that's the biggest thing that people could learn, you might say, is that communication in its essence is like an expression. I'm expressing what is really occurring for me. That means as soon as I'm really expressing what is occurring for me, I'm being real, I'm feeling real inside. Mm-hmm. And that in itself, it gives me a sense of confidence and it gives me a sense of relaxation. If my attention is all about how am I going to say something so that you will think a certain thing about me or you will feel a certain thing about me, then all of a sudden I'm already separating from myself and I'm less real to myself. All of a sudden I'm actually more afraid. I don't feel, you know, that I really know myself because all my concentration is trying to figure out what you're going to think about what I say and the possible implications of that. So you can see that as I'm speaking is that the more we go away from ourselves to looking outside to try to arrange things, the less possibility we have of actually really expressing what we want and who we are.
It sounds like there's an agenda, right? There's almost like an agenda my job is to try to convince you of something. So my focus, I'm moving it away from me and I'm focusing on trying to extract, manipulate or contrive the response of the other person to suit what I'm looking for, right?
And it makes sense.
Yeah.
We want what we want. But it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And so I try to get people back to kind of like an essential understanding of what communication is and its possibilities, the possibility that you can actually come to someone feeling like, this is me, this is how I am, this is what I want, and now, okay. And so then I'm not caught up in my attention on trying to make you different.
And I think when I think of listeners, what I would like to help people understand is what that actually looks like in practical terms. Like, what is it people do when they are not centered when they are communicating from this place of focused on other and being right? What is it they actually start to do? How does that sound? What does it look like when people are engaged in that process?
Well, at the far end of that, you know, when you listen to people's arguments, it usually sounds like this. You. Now, you always, you never, you don't, you. And so
a
it
lot
always
of years.
Looks about, yes. It looks about the other.
Yes.
So yeah. If you look at that,
yeah.
Here I am pointing at the other.
Yes.
And here you are pointing at the other.
Yes.
And nobody's there.
No.
Because everyone's attention is somewhere else.
Yeah.
And so then that's really a setup for all kinds of patterning and conditioning and genetics and everything to come in and play out what's there.
And it's, you know, people can spend a whole, I've seen people spend a whole lifetime in those patterns. And that's why
exactly.
I think, that's why we need to sort of help people with that. Because I do think people can get really trapped in it and not know how to escape it. And so a lot of it ends up being finger pointing. We talked about just the other day about the different kinds of finger pointing. Gottman named four of them. Four of them is criticism, is a form of pointing fingers. Defending. You think defending is finger pointing? Contempt, and then the other one is stonewalling, which I think where you shut the person out altogether because they're not agreeing with you. Right. So we have these four different ways of pointing a finger at people or shutting them out.
What favorite one is blaming.
That's
a really good one. There's this problem and it's your fault.
Yeah.
So then there's no possibility because nobody likes to be pointed at.
No.
And so if I'm in a relationship with someone and I'm pointing and I'm saying, I blame you for that.
Yeah.
Well, they're not going to, you know, come forth and say, oh, well, I would just love to be connected with you. They're going to do one of the things that you said. They're going to defend themselves or they're going to withdraw or they're going to go away.
Yeah.
And then we'll be even more right about blaming them.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of the downward spiral scenario in that way of approaching.
Yeah.
And so I think it takes a lot. See, communication, I think, really is about coming back to a place of you being responsible for what it is that you want to express, want to ask for, and how you want to be with another.
Mm-hmm.
And unless we come back to that, each of us, we're never going to manage to have a kind of communication that is satisfying.
So I know you do a lot of work in helping people make that transition away from this process of blaming, and then you move them into a different form of communication that allows them to connect. How do you do that? How do you engage people in that?
It's a play, you know. One thing I wanted to say to start is that, since I used that word play, that it's really important to kind of lighten up too.
Yeah.
Like to say, okay, my communication stinks and so does yours. And like, let's find out what it really is. Instead of like a self-condemnation or condemning the other, to recognize we're in a difficult place. You know, that we know there's love there. We know that somehow we want things to go well, but we don't have any idea how to do that. So like lightening up first
about
the whole thing is, I encourage that in people. And so there's a kind of a playfulness about learning, about communicating.
Yeah.
And then there's just really learning how to find out what's going on over here.
Yeah.
All that thinking, which is all where all those ideas come from, the blame and the righteousness and everything.
Yes.
It's almost like we're living here. We're living up here.
We're living in the head.
And
it's not really
we're living in the head. And there's a use of the head. The head is incredibly valuable.
Yeah.
But there's like the whole of us.
Yeah.
And for me, that's where communication really begins. It's like saying, okay, I'm not just my thoughts. So what am I? Well, I'm this body. We recognize, even if we're not in touch with the experiences in our body, we recognize that we are here in a body. Like, this is me. I look at myself in the mirror and there's Susan and there she is again. So to actually get back in touch with the body.
Yeah.
And even if it's the feelings in the body, the very little seemingly insignificant feelings.
Yes.
Like, you know, I have an itch on my right big toe.
Yes.
And I do that with people. So yes. we spend some time and people say, oh, that's so silly. It's so ridiculous. What's the point? But after a bit of people just, you know, what I have people do is look at each other, couple of people look at each other and they say, as I'm looking at you, I feel, this cold spot on my nose. Mm-hmm. Now, that seems pretty silly and not really very useful. But if you hear what I'm doing when I do that, I'm saying, I'm here with you as I'm looking at you. I am also experiencing something over here. And that very exercise of that allows people to have a sense of, oh, yeah, I'm here as I'm attending to you there.
Yeah.
I'm not getting mixed up. You're there. I'm talking to you and I'm over here feeling this experience in my body. So that's where I start.
Totally. I understand how someone hearing this might not really grasp the understanding of the value behind it. But I think to some extent, I did a show on emotional awareness, self-awareness. And I do think we disconnect from our bodies. And so when you talked about the head versus the heart, if they can actually be working somewhat in opposition to each other. And, you know, it's kind of like the person who will assert that they're not angry. But in fact, you see their face going red and you see their whole body responding with anger. Because if we're not attuned to what's happening in our body. So in a way, it sounds like what you do is you are helping people get out of their head by doing that and helping them connect to a physiological response, which might be more in tune with what's actually going on with them than what the story they have.
Because the body is the simplest.
Yeah.
The body, you can't do much with an itch on your shoulder.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's what it is. So it's a good way to start. And I encourage people to sort of be a beginner in regard to communication. So even someone who is, you know, confused about communication, they will understand this. They'll understand that they do have a body and they do have what I call experiences in their body. So that's a beginning point.
Yeah.
And then once that's like, oh, okay, I'm here looking at you, feeling this in my body, then I go on to have, okay, now I'm looking at you, I feel this in my body, and then I also feel something else. And that bring in the range of the emotion. Like, it's a level of our experience. So we have this body with the physical sensations, and then we have this layer called emotions. Now, a lot of people, as you mentioned when we spoke before, are not kind of in touch with their emotions.
No.
They can't even quite get it. They might get when they feel angry because it's a strong emotion, or they might get when they feel sad, you know, they're watching a sad movie and tears are coming, so they kind of can recognize, oh, there's sadness there, or someone close to them passes away or whatever. So, and then fear I consider like the third kind of emotion that we kind of pull away from, and that's sometimes harder to feel, especially for men, I think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's not an acceptable emotion in our culture, so that actually they might feel more comfortable being angry when underneath it, behind it, is a level of fear.
Yeah.
So I just have people practice, you know, I'm here as I'm looking at you. And I always say, well, if you wait long enough, you'll feel something. Even so, you know, you might feel awkward. So I kind of guide people to the idea that feeling awkward is a sort of very small level of fear. awkward. I feel uncomfortable. I feel just a little bit of fear.
You're getting them to be precise about even the little gradations of feelings and emotion. And
yeah, meanwhile, giving them those main ones to relate to. So something maybe I may feel a little irritated. So someone might be able to experience feeling irritated. And I say, well, that's kind of a form of anger. So little by little, it's amazing if you watch people as they go through this exercise, and you can do this yourself with someone who you're friendly with, you feel comfortable with. If you don't want to do it right away with the person who maybe is the most difficult to do it with. And in that, as you go along, you start feeling, oh, it's really okay. I'm actually letting this person know how it is for me. And all my attention is not on them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yet I'm with them.
You know, I always kind of try to unpack the underline of it, because I know one of my thoughts about it is that if we've been young, and I've worked with some people that have never, their family never talked about emotion. They didn't use feeling words at all, and it's like their brain has lost that ability to cultivate that immediate awareness of those even nuances of what's affecting them. And so there are right now, if you know, anyone were to go online and they go the feeling wheel, I don't know if you've ever seen a feeling wheel. Feeling wheel is like a circle. And what it does is, for those that don't have that vocabulary, it just gives you access to what are all the different variations of ways to express something. Because if you've never had that in your life and you never use feeling words, it can be hard. And it sounds like what you're doing is you're slowing the process right down for them. There's no rushing into salt problem solving. And you're just having them first learn to sit and experience themselves and start that process of putting words to what they're experiencing. And in a way, you're one thing I always look at is the brain. The brain is starting to be able to identify things that maybe have never been outside of their awareness, literally outside of their awareness. Mm-hmm. So that's an interesting process for them. Yeah.
Yes. So I think all these are very good ideas. And you know, for a lot of people, they're going to seem like, well, I just want to handle this problem. But it's kind of the bad news and the good news that you won't handle your problems if you try to do them within the realm of your mind. You will never do it, because your mind has so many different facets and different, and the patterning is so thick in there, and the conditioning is so thick, and the family and everything and that's why a lot of people feel so frustrated.
Yeah.
But they want to handle it through the mind, and it just doesn't work, especially in interpersonal relationships.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because the mind is limited. So the bad news is, no, you can't do it that way. You're going to have to set aside your, the bowing down to just the mind and the mental process to be more simple. Mm-hmm. And in a way that it's a key. And when you get that simple key, you feel very empowered in your relationships. And then you don't need to be the smartest person in the room.
Which gets to the topic of vulnerability. Because, you know, I think that's, I don't know what you encounter when you're working with people. And do you notice any gender differences, any differences in that fear of vulnerability? Because you are talking about people exposing things about themselves that might feel more vulnerable than being in the position of wanting to win an argument.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so I have to say that it may be that at the start, some people are more reluctant. As soon as I say I have some physical sensation in my body, it's amazing, because you're coming back to yourself, and that in itself is vulnerable. You're no longer putting it out there. You're no longer deflecting what you're feeling. for the sake of putting the attention somewhere else. And it, right away, it's vulnerable. But at the same time, because it's so simple, and in a way not that exposing, people are usually willing to do that physical one. And that already starts something in motion. The sense of, oh, it's okay for me to be here without my attention on the other, letting them know what's going on here. And that is a, that's like the crucial thing of changing that dynamic in terms of being with another.
So that's a starting point for them to become aware, to the, this heightened awareness and alert attunement into what's happening in their body. How do you work through that? Then what do you work through next?
When you're so now we have the body sensations. Now we've kind of opened up the realm of emotion. And then from there, what I use, it's not everything, but what brings the next degree of communication and vulnerability is asking for something. So this is my favorite little scene I like to give to people. So I'm in the office. I've got an office job, and there's this guy on the floor, on the same floor as me, and he's so cute, and I really like to, you know, go out with him. And we all of a sudden we're in the elevator, just the two of us. Okay, so it's my big chance, and then so I say, did you hear about the movie, blah, blah, blah? No. Well, yeah, there's that. It's a new movie and it's got really great reviews, and it's playing at the Cecil Theater this weekend. Oh, and maybe you don't like to go to movies. No answer. I guess you're busy. Okay, now I get to my floor. And I have to get out of the elevator. And I walk out of the elevator. That was our conversation. I walk out of the elevator and I say to myself, he doesn't like me. So this is my favorite way to explain how, because I can't ask for what I want, I'm going to dance around. I'm going to try to get, you know, hint at, I'm going to try to get the other person maybe in the mood to talk to me. And then when they don't give me what I want, I'm going to walk away and decide that I'm not good enough. They didn't like me, all that. So what I show people is how to ask for things. And it's not really that it's about asking for things, but it is about how to find yourself in expressing what you want, and also how to feel good about that expression without needing a result, without needing the other to give me what I want. And so in terms of what you were saying about vulnerability, it's a lovely way to introduce people to vulnerability, because everyone can relate to wanting something and to needing to know how to ask for it.
So it's, you know, and that may be a very, and I'm wondering how challenging that would be for people, because I know that when we hold expectations, because in a way that's what you're talking about, is we have expectations. And so when we're communicating, sometimes we have an investment in something, or maybe it feels threatening to us that they will not meet that expectation. And how do you get to that point where you can actually authentically, because I can certainly say, oh, I'll let go of expectations, doesn't mean I will, but how do you get there? How do you get to that point?
Well, let's go back to the simple again.
Yes.
Because, so what I start people out with, the first round or a couple of rounds of asking for things, is like pass the salt. Okay, so first of all, I show people how to make direct requests. I call these requests, direct requests, because when I say, would you like to pass me the salt? You can say, when I say that, what you hear is that I'm putting the responsibility on the other.
Right.
Do you want to? So right away, all of a sudden, in its own way, I'm pointing the finger toward the other. But if I say, pass me the salt, then I'm taking responsibility. I want the salt, and I'm asking you to pass. Now, a lot of people don't like it. They think it's rude, because I also kind of eliminate the word please.
Right.
Because please is so, not because there's anything wrong with please, but it's so associated with
politeness, kind of, or
begging for something, or,
right.
or
true,
or,
true.
You know,
yeah.
Yeah. So we eliminate that, and we do pass the salt. And so when I'm asking the other person pass the salt, then the other person gets to say yes or no. So part of that. So now I didn't have to supply a great deal of vulnerability. We do it all the time with people we're close to, we're comfortable with. We never say, would you like to pass me the salt? We say, pass the salt. Or if we have a close friend we feel really comfortable with, we say, let's go to the movies on Friday,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So we know about direct requests, and they're very powerful. We keep that to the people who we feel really comfortable with and safe with. So I show people how to bring that direct request into life, and to and the more we practiced asking that way. So yeah, let's, you know, that woman in the elevator, she could have said, let's go to the movies together, get together on Friday. Maybe she would have some small talk first. There's nothing wrong with that. It would be kind of funny if she didn't say anything.
Right.
But basically she knows she's going to make that request.
Yeah.
And then she's vulnerable because she didn't hide it with what you like and what you want, and if you're in the mood, or whether you're busy or not, or anything. She's just making the request, and she's showing what she wants without any kind of backup.
And in a way, those are all protective mechanisms, right? And I know some people are terrified of the meaning of someone saying no to them. So when of being rejected, but that applies, and you're using examples of, let's say with strangers or someone that we know as an acquaintance, and maybe that could even be more threatening if it's a partner, and there might be some ego involved. And so it comes back to vulnerability, doesn't it?
Like it totally
keeps circling
does.
Back to being vulnerable.
Yeah, it totally does. If you're not willing to be vulnerable with your partner, it doesn't matter how you justify it, it's not going to work.
Yeah.
Today is Valentine's Day, and that's what it's about. It's about your heart, in a way, being open to someone else's heart. Mm-hmm. If that's not what you're playing in your personal relationships, you're trying to get something, you're trying to feel secure, you're trying to feel safe, trying to get the other one to be something for you, it's not going to be a satisfying relationship.
Right.
It has to, like you said, it has to start with being open, with being vulnerable, with being present with another. And then there's a chance to meet, to really meet. And and I think what people can learn, which I encourage them to learn, is that when they are vulnerable, it's very powerful. Hmm. It's not a place where you feel unsafe. When you're really vulnerable and open, you actually feel safe.
Yeah.
You feel real, you feel safe, you feel seen, and that takes away so much of what's been in the way.
And connected. I would imagine, because you do a lot of your work within a workshop format, or within a format where people are kind of all working towards the same thing. I've heard some couples talk about not willingness to make themselves vulnerable with their partner. And as an example, one woman that I had encountered, she wanted to share her sadness, or she wanted to share some of the feelings she had. I don't think he meant unwell. I don't think he meant to in any way hurt her by this, but he would get upset at her being angry, being sad. So there was a negative reaction to that. And so as a consequence, she said, I'm not going to make myself vulnerable to him anymore, because when I do, I feel instead judged or criticized, or he's trying to get me out of that state. You know, I think maybe there's a discomfort, and the immediate response is, and I know they've done some research, men and women, men always want to kind of solve and be the heroes and come in and fix the problem, when really that partner might be coming forward, not wanting to have something fixed. Have you encountered that?
Tell me what happens. Absolutely. So, I mean, what I say to people, you know, I work with a lot of couples, and what I say to people is, like, we have to get the first thing straight is, like, do you want to have this work? You know, do you want to have your relationship work? Because if you do, you're going to have to step outside your comfort. You're going to have to, you know, experience something. And I'm not going to make it difficult for you. I'm going to try to make it as easy and as fluid for you to do that. But in the end, if you aren't willing, you're going to wind up going in the direction that you're going now, which is what brought you here.
Right.
So I really want to have people to buy in to, okay, this is worthwhile. When we got together, there was so much between us, and we wanted so much for this to work. And now it seems to have gone somewhere else. We don't understand. So really, the important thing is that people are willing. And once they're willing, then there's a lot of different things that they can do in practice. In fact, I brought one thing with me that I think is like a, you know, for Valentine's Day is the perfect beginning of learning how to be with your partner. That doesn't involve any of the things I've been talking about.
Right.
All those things are great if you want to do them. So
absolutely. Yes.
Okay. So here's the exercise. You're with your partner, one person says to the other person, tell me what's happening. Okay, simple as that. It can be different words, but I like to make it easy for people to grasp it. It's easy for anyone to grasp, what's happening? So one person, you have a timer. One person says, what's happening? And then the other one talks for 3 minutes. Now, during that time of talking, the one who asks the question is not going to say anything.
Okay.
It's not going to respond. Not going to answer. No matter what that person says is happening, you're just going to listen to them. And you're not even going to nod. And this is a really difficult. We are the nodders, the nodder society. It's the way we feel comfortable, the way we try to make the other feel comfortable.
Right.
But no nodding, no.
Just sitting still and
no eye rolling.
Okay.
And inside, whatever is going on inside, you can't try to stop yourself from thinking or feeling or anything. But in terms of being present, that you're really there for the other person to say anything. So when that 3 minute buzzer goes off, the person who's been talking says, what's happening? Tell me what's happening. And the same thing. And you go back and forth like that 3 times. So now that's 18 minutes of your life.
Okay, talking about whatever's happening inside them, whatever they're feeling.
Whatever. It doesn't matter. Okay. You're not even judging what someone says when you say to them, tell me what's happening. Anything that person is saying is fine.
Okay.
So, and it's such a simple activity. And I recommend for people in relationships to try 1 week of doing that every other day. So that's 18 minutes of your time, 4 times, and then 3 times in between, 3 days in between you don't do that. And it's amazing because it's very simple. It's not kind of abrasive. It's not, you know, it doesn't make people feel too uncomfortable. It's a little uncomfortable because we're not used to just listening, and we're not used to just talking and having someone just listen. But it's very, very powerful, and many things begin to arise for people when they do that simple exercise. So that's a takeaway.
That's
that
great.
I think will be
now,
really
is
valuable.
There, like, if in the course of me sitting there listening to my partner say what they're experiencing for 3 minutes, and what happens if something they say triggers me? in that course.
You wait till your turn.
So, oh.
And then, you know, you're all building up and like, wow, I let go. And then, but then that person's going to say to you, tell me what's happening. Okay. And then you can tell them what's happening.
So it's really an exercise on, it's funny because with all the work we do with mindful practice, it is kind of a mindful practice exercise because in the presence of sitting and listening, and even whatever emotions I might be going through as I'm listening to this other person speak, my exercise is in staying still. And not reacting to what I'm feeling.
Yeah. And it gives you so much power to do that.
Yeah.
Because you're sitting still and the person gets to say whatever they want to say. Yeah. You don't have to fight. You don't have to argue. Nothing. Yeah. And then when it's your turn, you say what you want to say. And one of the things it does is it allows us to actually, because we have, it's not just a mindfulness in that, okay, this is my continual thing. Listen. I've got to be quiet. Don't react. It gives you a chance to speak. You can say anything you want. You can be totally reactive in your 3 minutes. But it does give you the sense. And when that bell goes off in your 3 minutes and you're being reactive and you're going off, but when that 3 minutes is up, you stop. Just like that second, you stop talking and you say, tell me what's happening. And that is a beautiful thing.
I really like that. I mean, you know, I always translate everything and I try to understand it from what the brain does. And I know that we have a little part of the brain that has to do with impulsive reactions, reactivity. So we have a thought and feeling we can't help ourselves. We got to just spit it out there and put it out into the world. That there's in the practice of holding back, because there is something that happens as we practice noticing reactions and responding and not jumping on that reactive bandwagon, that it's actually we're training ourselves to be able to sit in our own presence of our reactions and not jumping on them, which I think is also an important part of communication, that we can still have a holding place for the feelings that are present and yet not... not just reacting to them. So you're no longer a reactor. You're actually being enabled to be more conscious of the things that you want to communicate to your partner. So
and
that's
one of
interesting.
The main things about it is that you are actually providing a safe place. Mm-hmm. You're each providing a safe place for the other to say whatever without interference, without stopping them, without reacting them, without putting them down, without blaming them. So it's amazing how much comes out of doing that. And I really recommend it for anyone who's listening to this to give it a try in their relationship as a kind of a Valentine's Day present to each other.
And if you can't hold out for 3 minutes, then that you might need to contact Susan Casper.
you can contact me anyway.
Because, you know.
I'm a good communication coach.
Yes.
Because I'm playful and because I know that in the end, we really want that communication to work. We want it to be satisfying and we want the best for each other and to connect and to meet. And I really have a great faith in that basic human desire.
Is there any, and so this practice is helpful. And I imagine in this, the course of doing these types of exercises, they over time get away from the you-ing, the pointing fingers and the those reactive kind of communication styles, and they get more into ownership. Do you find that there's a difference in how they work through depending on the issue? Like, is it a little easier when it's the smaller issues from day to day, from house cleaning to things like that, versus let's say there's an emotional injury in the relationship, such as an infidelity or something a little bit more substantive that requires problem solving and that they actually want some kind of outcome. So I might have to set a criteria that I don't want to, I want to make sure we structure things so that they're safer in the relationship or so that they're, when there is, what do you do in those circumstances when there's something salient?
Well, that's where requests come in so beautifully.
Yeah.
Yes. Because if I make a request, I say, when I say I feel hurt, don't say anything else to me right then. You know, I can make a request for what takes care of me. And that's the way we create an environment for ourselves. We're not expecting the other just to create a safe environment. We're taking responsibility for asking for that and for getting the answer. So now I'm saying, when you get angry, I feel afraid. Let me, let me just leave the room for a bit when your anger picks up. So just give me that freedom to just leave the room without any, judgment. I'm just making these things up, but I'm finding what I need. Yeah. Like I encourage people to find out, look, what is it in this situation, in this moment, that will take care of me?
Yeah.
That will take care of us, really.
Yeah.
And then I ask for that. Now, if this person's saying, no, I won't, then I have to consider that, well, maybe I'm not going to be able to find the safety here that I need. Yeah. And then I'm going to have to just go. I'm just going to have to do it for myself. Now I know what I need. And if you're not in agreement, and then eventually that might turn into, well, this relationship is not nourishing for me because I can't create a safe space with
that
you.
Decision has to be made. And I've actually seen situations where if you audio taped it and you audio taped all of the conversations, they probably sound exactly the same. And I've heard people arguing about the same thing for 10 years on end and spinning their wheels in the same patterns of defensiveness, attack, and never ever coming to a conclusion about that. But one of the things I've noticed is when they get caught in that, it's as if they're really trying to make a case. I'm looking at politics and the whole trial right now. It's like you make your case with your partner and you do it repeatedly and repeatedly and hope that one of those times in that, in your making your case for getting your needs met, that maybe one day they're going to actually follow through or say yes to that. And
it's never going to happen.
It's not going to happen, right?
It's not going to happen. One of the things is now this is where this whole play of communication could break down, even if you have the greatest tools and you mean well. Mm-hmm. Because when I'm doing that again and again, when I'm doing this over and over again, and maybe it's about the cats and maybe it's about the laundry or picking up or you're leaving toothpaste on the kitchen on the bathroom sink, but it doesn't matter what it's about, but I recognize that this goes on and on, and I'm not going to work it out with this person. Now, that could either mean to you, well, just break up and go to another person, but more often it means this is about something of mine from some time in the past. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is actually not, that's why I can't work it out, because I can't work it out here. Mm-hmm. He can't be enough for me. If my father did that to me and I made my decision, then no, you're not going to get close to me. He can't offer me enough, this guy, to make it work. I'm going to have to look into where I made that choice and see if I can disengage from that. And that's where sometimes, when I work with couples, usually I work with them individually and together. It's always,
well, because there's a me, a you, and then an us, and we're bringing our stuff into the relationship, and there might be a couple's issue, but what you're saying is sometimes you need to look at what might be going on inside of you. And if there's something that's originating from your childhood that's playing it, because we project into relationship. That's probably better done when we get a little confused, because navigating those emotions and being clear about what's going on, sometimes it is helpful to go and I think consult and have somebody who's a little less invested in the process or who can see what's going on is more helpful. I don't know what your thoughts are about that.
Yeah, I think it's kind of like, not why I do that with couples, mm-hmm. is because it gets mixed up. You think it's him, mm-hmm. but in a way it's not. So then when I have that session with each person, then that other is now part of your dynamic.
Yeah.
So I show people how what is going on that seems to be about that other one is really your own dynamic going on inside. And then it can come out that it's a past relationship, or it's a parent or something else, some decision that was made. And so, yeah, what you said is totally true.
Yeah.
Not everyone is willing, you know. It depends on our investment, mm-hmm. in being right about things, and whose fault it is.
Yeah.
If you're at all open, then you can see eventually that, wow, this repeats itself. It happened with my last girlfriend, mm-hmm. and now it's happening with her. There's something I'm not seeing clearly. And it's not about working out necessarily that past with your parent, but it's about the clarity that, oh yeah, this is the decision I made, and I don't have to have that decision run my life. Mm-hmm. And so that's the personal work. It's not always about kind of constantly digging up old things and messing around with them. It's sometimes just having a clarity of seeing where it came mm-hmm. from, and that you chose to make that decision mm-hmm. about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think this is something that for people that have not had this experience, it's really important them to actually, if you're noticing a pattern that keeps continuing in the relationship, this would be either tuning into a show like this, maybe going to a workshop, maybe going to a counselor. If it's bigger than you, I remember once, I think it was Gottman saying that sometimes the problem can feel bigger than the couple's ability to be able to clearly
exactly.
navigate that themselves. And I think, you know, if you're able to tune into a show like this and take those tips and incorporate them, I think that's amazing. And if not, then maybe that's time to go and turn to some other less involved and maybe clearer thinker to help you with that. I told you earlier that I'd once asked a client, would you rather be right or would you rather be happy? And his response was actually, I would rather be right. And, you know, so he was pretty clear about that stance that he took, and that was his right to kind of be there and not really, you know, because you asked the question, would you rather have the relationship or would you rather continue out in your pattern? It's kind of exactly the same question, right?
Yes, exactly.
And if they take the stance in a way, you just have to honor it, that sometimes people are clear about the desire to over work past those barriers. And if they're not, it is our decision to make whether that's going to be a viable situation for us.
Yes,
yeah,
that's right. I remember one teacher of mine used to say, you can be right, dead right.
You're right.
and it's like there's a kind of a death in being right, that there's no life. I don't mean that like a death, like dying,
yeah.
but like an absence of life. When we're clinging to being right about our position, we become rigid and we lose a kind of a fluidity and a lightness and life. So yeah, I think that's an important part of this whole communication thing is for each person to ask themselves, you know, would I rather have togetherness, would I rather have relationship, would I rather have love, would I rather have joy,
what is absolutely
more than being right?
Yeah.
And if so, then I'm going to have to, you know, try something else.
Yeah. One individual that I'd spoken to once, he had talked about how being wrong, or the idea of being wrong, was actually instilled when he was really young. And so one of the fears he had about coming forward with any kind of non-reactive response was that it was very shameful when he was young to be wrong. And that was something that he was punished for. And so that's why sometimes we need to kind of find out where that attachment to being mm-hmm. right and what it meant for us and where did that come from. It may not be at face value. There might be a reason that it's so threatening to have to feel that somehow it's shameful to put yourself in that vulnerable position or mm-hmm. not to come out strong with that. So there can be, it's like peeling a bit of an onion, right? You're trying to unpack this. Do you have any other suggestions or thoughts around, you know, people wanting to improve or on their relationship communication?
Well, when you said that, I went to kind of a more general approach, which is, you know, we're all so fallible and we all are, none of us are perfect, and we all have stuff. We you know, if we didn't do it ourselves, then, you know, we know our parents must have done it to us, and our grandparents on both sides did it to them, and on into the genetic pool.
Yeah.
And so I think that an important thing is to really let yourself off the hook a bit in terms of, you know, you're not, you don't have to be perfect.
No.
You don't, you can say, oh yeah, this is not working, and I might've, I could do better. So kind of a lightness in terms of being willing to look and being willing to try things. And you can be playful too. Like it's to me, communication is an incredible play. And sometimes I think I told you, I liken it to singing or dancing or reading poetry, or it's my expression. And so my communication is my expression, and whatever is going on with me is part of that expression. Nothing is wrong. Nothing is bad. So just an attitude that all is included, and that it's okay to feel anything, and that you can learn to be with that and to communicate with that in a way that is nurturing for you and those around you.
That sounds really beautiful, Susan. I like that. I mean, you're creating a really safe place for people to be inclusive. And so even if they happen to be triggered, that it's an okay thing for them to include all the emotions that are present for them. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Is there anything you want to leave people off with today about communication or Valentine's Day?
I think the big thing is that I think a lot of times we misinterpret what love is, and we bring our ideas of what love is, and then we put ourselves up against it, like we measure ourselves with our idea or our ideal of love, whether it's our own feelings of love or the way we love. So we easily kind of are self-deprecating in that. But love is more like a fragrance. It's like what comes out of you when you're being really who you are, and when you're very deeply relaxed, and when you're open in your heart. Like love is kind of pouring. It's almost like a fragrance or a substance that comes out of you. And I think if people reevaluated, you know, their idea, the definition of love, then they would be kind of kinder to themselves and to the other. Like we don't have to fit into a definition of love, and it doesn't have to look like anything in particular. So I think maybe it's off the topic of communication, but I think it's almost like a context of feeling like being embracing to what you are as part of that idea of love is, it's all inclusive. Like you use that word inclusive. I like that.
That's a great Valentine's note to close off with. So Susan, I know that you do really good work out there, and I know that you reach people and you create a safety for people. And so I'm really pleased that you came and shared with some of the work that you do. And I wish you the best. And I hope that we get maybe another chance to talk again. So thank you for doing this, for sharing your
You're
time
welcome.
With us, and for listeners here. Just if you stay on the line, I'll be right back with you. But I want to thank you so much, Susan. This was Susan Casper, someone that's worked extensively with people. I think it's been one of your major passions, has been connecting with people and helping them improve their lives and their relationships. And how can people reach you? If they wanted to, if they had some desire.
Well, you're welcome to write me a note at susan@evolvenowinc.com. That's the best way to reach me, is to send me an email and I'll get back to you, and then we can arrange to talk.
Okay, wonderful. And I will put that up as well. So when we do post this, if someone wants to contact you, they can contact you through the site. And I think that'd be lovely. So thanks again. And
yes, thank you for having me, Paula. It's been so nice.
So wonderful.
It's so easy to be with you.
Thank you. That's so awesome. And it's been years. So for me, this is especially meaningful because I haven't seen you for a while. So I'm so grateful we got to meet and connect in this way. And I want to thank the listeners, too, for tuning in to the show. And as you approach Valentine's Day and you start reflecting on your relationship and thinking what's working, what's not working, what do I need to do to make things better? This is where we go. We turn to our resources and we listen to people out there. And hopefully we can draw in a little bit of the information that we get from the people around us. This is us joining together to learn. So I wish you all the best. Take good care. Okay, let me just...